Welcome to the Apartment Operators Podcast, where you can learn from experienced operators what it really means to be an apartment operator. No fluff, no sugarcoating, just the raw, unfiltered truth of the ups and downs of operating multifamily community.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Apartments Operator Podcast. Today, we have Josh Appelman. Josh, welcome to the show.
Hey, how we doing? Appreciate you having me on and look forward to talking about the apartment operations and how the industry is going.
Awesome. So yeah, let's not let our listeners wait. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself. How does your portfolio look like? How did you get to multifamily? And we'll go from there.
Yeah. So I'm a five-time Inc. 500, 5,000 recipient for my past business. We're scaling now. We look for distressed value-add multifamily properties to purchase. We like to plug in our operations management team, or we like units that are dated, that need to be renovated, upgraded, and we like to reposition the property. So we're from my past business is we scaled that very large, and that kind of propelled us into multifamily, and here we are.
Awesome. So what kind of portfolio do you guys have right now? Do you have C class, B class, 100 units, 1,000 units?
Yeah, so it's definitely workforce housing. It's C, I'm going to say C plus to B minus. So we take them when they're, let's say, D plus, C minus, and we raise the bar. They can't ever be, I'm going to say, B plus or A, of course, because just the vintage and then where they're located. But we look for workforce housing that's been dated, that's been mismanaged in a sense that things just keep rolling over. We've got 205 units, direct ownership, owner operator. We are under contract right now on another 144 units. And we look for just properties that we can purchase on our own, and we can reposition and keep adding to our team. There's a difference when you're syndicating thousands of units, you only own a fraction. But when you own and operate your entire portfolio, the growth is much slower, but it's much more meaningful. So there's the play, and there's the difference. But that's what our game plan is. We've got plenty of runway left. We feel like to get to our 750 units in the next 3 years, and then 2,000 units within the next 10 years, which I think is underachievable, but we'll get there. We're on track.
Absolutely. And which kind of markets do you guys operate in?
Major, we're in Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky, which is a major Midwest MSA, Dayton, Ohio. We will stay within an hour radius. We've looked in Columbus, Ohio. We've looked into Indianapolis, Lexington, Louisville. I mean, we can certainly plug in any surrounding MSAs, but you've got to have economies of scale, and you can't be too fragmented with a bunch of scattered sites and scattered areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you do a lot of big projects, heavy value add, being close by is very, very, very helpful. So the very first question we usually ask every guest is, do you guys self-manage or do you guys use third party?
Yeah, we started out using third party, and that came to an end when you're dealing with scattered sites, older properties, you have to deal with a different type of property manager who's willing to take those properties on. So I'm going to say that they're not necessarily subpar. They're just a different type of property manager that you're going to get versus one that's going to manage a 150 plus unit community. So we started out with third party property management, and our second property manager for second acquisition, we found out that they were stealing deposits from tenants, and that propelled us to take management under our own roof and really just vertically integrate all operations into one. It's just one of those things you don't want to find out, but you have to be able to react and make decisions and take things on your own. It's not something we wanted to do, but it happened for us, not to us, in the sense that now we've got full control over every move we make, and we can apply as much pressure that's needed to be applied to get certain things to happen.
Yeah, well, you said two very important things I'm going to reiterate here. Is one is the word we hear from every single operator we talk to that went the self-management route, and almost all of them did, is control, right? It gives you control. And nobody thinks property management is a profit center. Nobody thinks it's a great, fun thing to do. It's definitely a brain damage center, but it's giving you the control that you absolutely need in these things. And then, you know, you should look at it from the positive perspective is you learned that lesson early enough. We learned that lesson 500 units deep and two property management into it until we decided to bite the bullet and take on management. Some people waited till they had 1,000 units and then they took on the effort. But almost every large operator I've ever talked to have switched over to self-management at some point.
Yeah.
So let's talk about self-management, right? How do you find the right people? How do you hire? Who do you hire? Your operation is not large enough to have multiple layers, right? So I'm assuming you have just on-site people. Tell us a little bit about how your management structure look like.
Yeah. So, I mean, with us being vertically integrated, we come from construction. So we have our renovation arm. We've got our asset management arm. We purchase properties. We've managed them and then managing in-house. So we've got multiple, I'm going to say profit centers. The property management company is not a profit center. And we do that on purpose to make sure that our expenses on the property are nominal from what we can control. Keep the property value where it should be so that you can execute on your business plan. But with that being said, we've got other avenues of income coming in. We can afford to have a larger staff than what another property management company of our size would be. So we're mm-hmm. able to have a larger financial team behind the scenes that's reconciling all the accounts and making sure that we're operating under performance accounting, not just the daily bookkeeping accounting. And performance accounting is where you're setting metrics and targets and KPIs and meeting your budget requirements month over month. So you can be a profitable management company on a property side or a really profitable company because you're managing all of the little paper cuts that erode the P&L throughout the course of the month, weeks, just those decisions that get made that maybe are now taking a second look at that maybe aren't needed to be expenses versus a property management company that would throw cash at the problem. We take care of the problem at a cheaper rate. We control the material and the labor. Our team's made up of a combination here in the office as well as at home with different personnel answering their phones, answering leasing questions, executing leases. People are the pillar to any company. The past company I scaled, I think 505,000 5 years in a row. We grew rapidly, but ultimately we grew and we had to balance operations in from the back side to the front side. You've got an influx of sales. Now you have to deliver service on the back end, which increases your labor pool and your in-office staff. Same with property management. You bring on a new property. Now you've got to balance out the back end operations. You're bringing on a whole another clientele base, say another 88 unit apartment complex or 144, which we're going through. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to absorb the growth. Apartments in management, they require maybe one or two people per 100, depending when you get to scale. So your staff can offset their time a little bit differently, but you've got to have good people. You've got to have competent people. We have a morning stand-up meeting every morning at 7:45 in the morning. Some people are still sleeping then. We're up and we're meeting on and setting our daily targets. Daily targets equal weekly goals. Weekly goals constitute for our monthly, quarterly is yearly. So awesome. if you're setting those targets, your ship has a destination versus just floundering out in the middle of the ocean. We know where we're going every day.
Awesome. So for people that are considering doing what you guys are doing, can you give us some examples of those daily, weekly, monthly goals that you set for your team? How do you guys track them? Just a little bit behind the scene peek of what's important to you guys, because everybody has benchmarks, everybody has targets, but it's not, I've learned that it's not always the same things and not everybody look at the same things the same way.
Yeah. And you're not necessarily even supposed to meet your targets, but you have a target. So if you set your target, you're doing more than most. But there's different types of targets you're going to set. You have your company targets. You've got for us, how many units do we want to acquire within the next X amount of years? That comes down to your yearly. What's your top line revenue look like? What's your NOI look like? How many people are you going to need? Leasing requirements, maintenance staff. The targets. I mean, we've got a pretty built out list of targets to hit. We're not supposed to hit them though. The bar keeps on getting raised higher and higher, but again, we've got targets. So your unit count equates to top line revenue and then your top line revenue. What do you want to keep at the end of the day? And then what is your overall asset, your value of your assets? Like I said here, within next 3 years, we want 750 units. What is it going to take to get there? And it's not syndicating 750 units isn't a problem. It's not. It'd be, especially if you're a trusted operator, you know what you're doing, you know where you're heading, you've got the team to get there. But if you're the owner operator and you don't have a bunch of partners and LPs, and it takes time, and you have to be methodical, and you have to have great relationships with banks and able to prove that you can get there.
Yep, absolutely. So you mentioned that you like the value add, right? To come in, do the work, make it better, and make more money out of it. So we like to ask our guests the same question on both on the income side and the expense side, right? Give us a few things you guys do to increase income, and then we'll turn around and ask the same question about reduce expenses. But assuming that, you know, everybody has the same answer about raising rents and charging utilities, right? Give us the more creative things that you had a chance to do along your way that might teach some of our guests a new trick.
Yeah, well, I think to increase your income, you need to look at your expenses. So your line items for every expense. Where is the money going and how do you keep it? So lawn mowing, for example, landscaping. You should have a property service fee. There should be, each tenant should pay a property service fee to offset that cost. So figure out your cost throughout the course of the year and then divide that by the amount of units on the complex. And there you've got your hard cost. Maybe add an admin fee on top of it's going to be a fractional cost of the tenant, but there should be a charge there to offset the cost. Mm-hmm. Do the same for pest control. There should be, and then of course, your pet income. There's a website, I think it's petscreening.com. We just got hooked up with them, I think 2 months ago. And it's a website where all the tenants, whether they have a pet or not, they have to go in there and apply. So a lot of these, what's happening right now is the emotional support animals, people will bring them on site and then give you an emotional support letter saying that their doctor prescribed this medical instrument called a pet to them. Well, there's websites out there you pay $50 to and you get this letter. Well, yeah. 9.99% of the time or times out of it's a BS letter. So this website protects us as landlords. These AI algorithms, however they do it, they find out if the doctor's legit and if the letter's legit. And if not, it's going to go ahead and auto charge their ledger. That's loss prevention, because pets do what pets are supposed to do. If things happen inside the unit that you can't control, it's going to happen. We charge property service fee to the residents. We renovate to where we're meeting market rate rents without an issue. So we renovate our units at a level to where no surrounding properties can compete if they're not renovating units, and typically they're not. And I say granite countertops, stainless steel appliances, new cabinetry, LVP flooring, designer plumbing fixtures, electrical fixtures. Everything looks, feels as if it's brand new. And we're acquiring the residents that are willing to pay a premium faster and than any other property can, because they're dated in those areas. As far as creative income streams, just we do a property service fee, pest control fee, leasing fee. We look at our expenses and how do we recapture the cash back.
Okay, awesome. Any certain amenities you like to add to properties?
There's a little an area to put your pets out there and do their thing. That's a great little dog area. Usually the properties have a little grilling area, off-street parking, those sort of things. We like our appliances to be, of course, brand new, stainless steel typically. I mean, we're not looking for pools per se. There's got to be economies of size, and we're playing in the sub 60 unit complexes where we're a little bit bigger than some people can play in, and a lot smaller than what institutional wants to see. So, but pools will erode your line items, your profitability on a property. Yeah, we want it to be a safe, functional, and clean place for people to raise their families, and more or less be the next step for home ownership.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned that, and I sometimes forget, because for me it's kind of like, yeah, of course, but I sometimes forget people don't always think about that. But you've mentioned pets multiple times, and Recent studies that have been reading, it showed that about 60% of all residents start a search with, is it a pet-friendly environment? So providing those pet amenities, a dog spa or a little fenced dog park, being pet-friendly, even if there are fees involved, because everybody has fees involved with the pets, right? But willing to accept pets is a very big plus for a lot of the operators out there right now. And in fact, for us, that we've been doing that for years, when you go on one of our property websites and the list of amenities, pet friendly is like number one, because that's what people are looking for these days, especially after COVID. So I just kind of wanted to reiterate what you were mentioning. So let's flip that conversation on the expense side of things, right? What are some ways you found that you can cut the cost? Because at the end of the day, as owners of multifamily, the value is directly driven from the NOI. And for the NOI, it doesn't matter if you added a dollar to the income or you reduced a dollar from the expenses, that dollar impacts the value the same way. So which ways do you guys go and look at the P&L and try to find ways to cut the cost without impacting the level of service you're providing?
Well, and you need to measure your flow through as well. So if you're adding it to the top line, what is actually hitting the NOI? Because that dollar on the top line can also get captured in the expenses. So monitoring your expenses through KPIs, such as even utility usage month over month, and then year over year. What was it last month compared to this month, and then last year compared to this year in the same month? And you can find possible issues just by monitoring utility usage. There could be an underground leak. You never know, but if you're not monitoring it, you're definitely not going to know. Maintenance and labor, monitoring, again, where you're at from month over month and year over year, but also being able to be in control of the materials, where you're buying them at. We've got national accounts set up with vendors so that we're able to procure labor and material, not with national vendors, but material on a much better basis than a lot of people, just because of our buying power, how much we do purchase over the course of the year. So I think the expenses just need to be routinely monitored in order to keep them or even lower them. Mm-hmm. When we had property management, when we first got going, there was a month where there was over like $9,000 on maintenance. So, and I remember that, because I was like, what the hell did we spend $9,000 on maintenance? And then it was sitting over all the receipts and this and that. And it basically, it's just throwing money at the problem. With us having full control of the management piece, we fixed the problem at a much better rate, and it's fixed. It's not just throwing money at the problem and hoping that it's fixed.
Yeah, no, you're right. And as owner operators, we have an opportunity that usually most owners don't have, is for us specifically, we always prefer to acquire the equipment and train our guys in order to do a certain job than to call in an external vendor to do the job. So obviously you got to have licenses and permits and certain things, but the very base simple example I can give is slab leaks. So we had a slab leak, and a slab leak, for the listeners that are not aware of it, is basically when you have a pipe burst underneath the concrete, underneath the building. We had one that happened underneath the parking lot, and I had a direct example because we had a slab leak at a certain spot in a certain parking spot right before we took over management, and the property management called in a third party, and that cost about $3,500. Versus 2 years later, we had another slab leak at a very similar spot in a very similar parking lot. And that ended up basically being two of our guys working for about 6 hours, right?
Yeah.
The cost difference is huge. And that basically adds tons of value to your property, because you're not spending thousands of dollars on something that your team can handle, because right? It's not that complicated. So we always prefer to buy equipment. And you kind of mentioned looking at the expenses and trying to dig in a little bit. An example of something that we came across was a small 20-unit property. And whoever designed the landscape over there, there were over 110 sprinkler heads around the property. And there was not a lot of grass to water. So we came in, we brought a landscaper, we did a review, and we ended up eliminating over 60 sprinkler heads. out of 100 and something. Just the water consumption dropped, and the grass still looks great because it gets the amount of water it needs. There was just an overkill. Like, we're talking about a 15 square feet piece of grass had about 12 sprinkler heads around it. So yeah, absolutely taking a look and digging into why is this so high, and then trying to understand, can I do it better? Can I do it differently? Is a big moneymaker for operators.
Yeah, there's a flow valve, or a part that is placed in the water main that eliminates the air going through the pipes. Is your build on water plus the air? And I didn't even know it existed, but that is one way to greatly lower your water bill. And there's only like two or three companies that are able to produce these valves, but they.
Well, now I'm learning a new trick. What's the name of that thing?
I want to say it's called Flow. Let me.
We'll search for it after the show, and we'll share it with our guests in the show notes. But that's
definitely Flow Saver. Flow Saver. Yeah,
well, absolutely, because that little thin spins, whether air moves or water moves or whatever. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. That could save a lot of people a lot of money, especially larger properties, and even more properties that have the commercial water heaters or boilers and the pools. Yeah. We had a property with over a 50,000-gallon pool. You can imagine how much water this thing consumed.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. So there you go. Our listeners learned it, and I learned a new trick.
That's kind of like the cable. Like, do you add cable to your property, or do you not add cable and internet to your property? So, I mean, we were looking into adding the internet, but now it's internet everything. But we found out through a survey that we wouldn't have enough people sign up for the internet to even make it make sense. You're getting charged on every unit no matter what. And then if you can upsell, sell them at a premium, then you're making money. But if there's a net zero, you got to find out what it would be. That's kind of.
It's a double-edged sword. Yeah. If you're fully occupied or very close to fully occupied, then this can be a moneymaker. But if your property has any hiccup and your occupancy drops, you're still paying for every unit, whether it's occupied or not. So on the lower occupancy dips, you're hurting. So it's a double-edged sword. Plus, some people will find it a turnoff. It's like, what do you mean I have to take your internet package? I want to get my internet package. I want this. I want that. So some people find it a turnoff. Some people find it a value. It's kind of like, I didn't find it as a big moneymaker as it should be. Because we had property with both. So
it comes with the contract. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing with the laundry machine contracts, right? Usually it sounds great. To have hands off and a company takes care of it, but I found that the service is lacking, and you don't really, as an owner, you don't see any income coming from at least laundry machine room. So it's definitely better to own than to lease.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree.
Awesome. So one of the most critical things for us as owners of multifamily is retention. Retention means no turn, which means reduce capex, reduce expenses, smoother operations. Do you guys do any special things for retentions, any incentives, any activities, pool parties, you know, or resident engagement? What do you guys do in order to maintain a high retention rate?
I think it boils down to service. So if there's a work order, an issue, anything at all, it's getting it, one, acknowledging that it came in, and two, having it done within 72 hours. So if you're letting issues go, if your property's not presentable, curb appeal, making sure the landscaping's kept up with, making sure the place looks stellar at all times, you're going to have people that just take their money somewhere else. If you have great service, great property, great curb appeal, everything's brand new, feels good, looks good, safe, functional, clean. I mean, where are the people going to go? What is competition out there? What does it look like? What is it doing better? I think seeing what the other properties are doing and what they're not doing, making sure you are doing what they're not, then you're going to have the market cornered no matter what.
Mm-hmm. And, well, you mentioned your portfolio is mostly smaller unit composed of smaller properties. Sometimes it's hard for a smaller property to compete on amenities. Right, the big apartment complex have pools and gyms and all of this kind of abilities. Do you guys do anything special to compensate for that, or it just comes down to we have the best looking properties with the best looking amenities, and we give great service, so we beat everybody on that?
So you've got brand new, our smallest one's 33 units, and then our largest one is 62. But it comes down, the brand new property down the road is going to charge more. So we're still we're cost conscious as far as where we're at within the market. As long as we're a fraction lower, still provide a great house, a great place to live. I mean, we know what we can and can't do. We know what we can get away with, what we can't. We're going for aesthetics for sure, because we're helping our compensate the we're gonna say the age and the size and the amenity package with what can we control? We can control what the property looks like inside. That's enabled us to increase the rents to market plus some. We do get churn. I mean, we get churn. People come and go.
Yeah,
They can't.
standard.
Yeah, they don't want to pay what we feel is reasonable, and they just move on. And I mean, I don't know right now where they're going, because there's rents are, I mean, places are tough to find, but we've got, I mean, we constantly have unit turns every single month, just people moving on, which you get, I mean, not a ton, but you get people that are moving. How do you retain the best tenants? Just good service. Be there. Answer the phone. I mean, think anyone can pick up the phone right now and dial a property management company, and nine out of 10 of them are not going to answer. Just answer the phone. It's your customer at the door. So there's things that are that I brought over from my past company to this company, of course, building them both up. But those are the things, just making sure that you're there for your customer.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. So if you were kind of like looking back and talking to somebody that is just getting started, right? What would be a great advice for someone like this?
I
Some
would,
of the
you've
lessons
got,
you heard, learned the hard
yeah.
way.
Well, you've got to have confidence first. And confidence comes from competence, right? So competence is from learning the lingo, learning the acronyms, how to underwrite. I think if you learn how to underwrite, that means you can take a rent roll, you can take a T12, you can plug it in, and you can identify the value of the property. That's going to give you a level of confidence, because now you can evaluate an apartment community. Now that I think is the building blocks. Then you start learning with the cap rates. You start connecting the dots on different acronyms that have a higher knowledge of thinking, so that you can start to just apply maybe back of the napkin approach on different things, just getting high levels, and then you drill down. But you have to have the confidence first. You have to develop those skills. You have to get in the room. You have to start networking with people that are doing it. Maybe select somebody who you want to aspire to be and start looking and at what they're doing, because they've already been where you're currently at. Just what did they do to get there? In real estate, anyone who's doing real estate, they're more than happy to share with others what they need to do next in order to level up themselves. So getting in the room, watching YouTube, there's a ton of content on YouTube, and I mean it's out there. People are willing. We're on this podcast right now. Listen to podcasts. Just start listening to how conversations go. Pick up little nuggets. If you pick up one nugget from one conversation, apply it to the next. It's just connecting the dots all the way through. Right now, I mean, we're talking, but we're discovering different things through conversation. In real estate, you're never going to be, you're never going to know it all. You have to
Yeah.
keep on. I mean, you're learning about management. You have to tax exposure. You have to, I mean, just being a CFO, more of in a CFO seat, where you're able to look at things through different optics. So by getting into it though, just Rich Dad series, read books, listen to Audible instead of watching Netflix. Dive into to just getting into knowledge, just to eat, breathe knowledge. So.
Yeah, there's a lot to learn, and a lot of people think we're in the buildings business, but we're actually in the people business in the multifamily world, and people will always find a way to surprise you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's definitely, we learn every day. Hey, I just learned something new right now about that flow valve. So we're definitely gonna look into that one ourselves too. So got any little horror story or funny story that you want to share?
There's just different there's stories every single day. I mean, there really is. There's just things that come up, pop up. I mean, when we're taking over a property, we know kind of what we're up against now at this point, which is great. When you're first getting in there, it gets that intimidation goes away through experience. But like I mentioned earlier, I think the worst part is just bad property managers stealing from people, stealing their deposits. And we're not talking about a month's rent. This lady was taking 2 and 3 months worth of rent, which we never charged. We charged 1 month's rent, or we use Obligo through AppFolio. But this lady was just taking $2,000 and $3,000 Venmo payments from these people. It's just a horrible woman. She's being prosecuted. I mean, still going through the system. And this is, geez, a while ago. But that's just more of a, not a horror story. Well, it is. I mean,
It
took
is.
advantage of
It's a
people.
part of
It
it.
pushed us to where we're at. But yeah, those are the type of things that are out there. If you're dealing with in the people business, people just do things, and there's no rhyme or reason for it.
Just
But
be ready for it.
those things are everywhere. People think that just because you're in real estate, that you don't need to operate a business. It's time to sit back and relax and be at the beach. I think you can do that if you're an LP. If you're a limited partner in a syndication, that is all right. You planted some cash here. You sit back, let us operate it. But when I'm talking to other operators, you're like, eh, I don't want to push the rent. I'm good with my. That's not, you're doing yourself a disservice. And if you have any partners, you're doing them a disservice. And this just happened, I think last week I was talking to somebody, and it's just, if you're an operator, you're operating a business. Real estate is no different than any other business. It's just not, you're going to deal with people stuff. You're going to have war stories. You're going to have people quit. You're going to have to deal with hiring people, tenant relate, just all of the nonsense that goes with just any other business out there. So whether it's a restaurant, there's some are worse than others, but some are much more intensive, operationally intensive than others. But real estate, if you're operating it, you're active, you're pushing, you're meeting in the morning, you're going over whether you're at renovations, you're pushing the leasing, you're pushing the rates, you're get your foot on the pedal. You're pushing your business forward. Stories are going to
It's a
come from that.
business. It's absolutely a business. And a lot of people think about multifamily as a passive investment, and it's not. It's really not. It's, unless you're an LP, like I said, there's nothing passive about what we do. Being an operator, it's in the name, right? You operate. You got to be the guy that pulls things. And it's not just, oh, I have a phone call with the property manager. There's once a quarter, and everything is awesome. There were days where this might have been the reality, but this is 2024 and it's no longer the reality. So that kind of segued me to my next question is it's 2024. 23 was not a great year for a lot of the real estate all over the country. Where do you see the market going in the next couple of years?
I mean, we were pegged to have 3 rate cuts this year. That's not happening. I think that, and we don't know what the black swan event is yet. We're in election year, so
A lot is
third quarters.
covered.
Yeah, the third quarter. I don't know. I mean, we're under contract for 144 units. We've already closed. We've had 5 closings this year so far, which is great. I mean, we buy deals. We buy good deals. It's real estate. Okay. I mean, we're not going after the whales every time. That's great if those come along, but it's got to be, we're able to find deals now that we couldn't find last year for sure. Where is it going? I think rates are going to stay where they're at for through to 2025. There's really no sign from the Fed showing that they should lower them. And in all fairness, why would they at this point? They need to with the treasuries. But I think the people that set themselves up are going to have a rough time ahead with floating rates. Rate locks are those are expiring, rate caps. But I think that it's just, hold on. The survive until 25, I think it's more like survive until 27. But if you're a buyer, you're buying. You're buying. Good, great. KKR just bought like $2.7 billion over 5,000 units across the country. This just came out this week. So you see moves like that, and then you hear rents will double within the next 10 years.
Well,
Hopefully, 10 years from
but the
now, I'm
big
not going to
pocket.
say it should have bought more. So we'll see.
Well, look, in real estate, it doesn't matter which asset class. If you're playing the 15 plus year game, I still haven't seen a lot of people lose money on a 15 year game. Just there's not a single property anywhere in the country that is selling for less than what it was selling 15 years ago. So if it's a long-term play, and that's a different game. The short-term, 2, 3, 5 years, that's a little bit more of a up-in-the-air kind of thing. Depends on how November is going to play out for this country. So, but there's definitely a challenge going on in the last couple of years of rents going flat or somewhere negative. Some places are still positive, but not nearly as much as they were in the last 10 years. And then on the other side, we have expenses that are keep growing at a much higher pace than they did in the last 10 years. So between labor and material and insurance, I think every owner, multifamily owner in the country got hit really, really hard with insurance in the last year. So the next couple of years, I think, are going to be very interesting in the multifamily world. And I think a lot of people, like you said, that set themselves up with variable rates and expiring cap rates, I think a lot of people are going to be hurt, which is a negative. But on the positive side, if you're a buyer, there might be some opportunities coming their way.
Yeah. Yeah. Where's your all's portfolio mainly located?
So we're in Texas. So we've only operated in Texas.
Yeah, you got hit with taxes and insurance pretty hard then.
Well, taxes is a common thing for us. We have an attorney on retainer every year, basically, to fight the property taxes. They've been growing at the same rate for a long time now. So that's kind of part of the underwriting already. What we did not see is the massive increase in insurance in the last few years. We're talking some properties have seen upwards of almost 100% double their insurance rate, which is massive, right? For every $5,000.
Where is that at per unit?
I don't have the math in front of me, but the problem was not just necessarily increase in price. So for us, for example, we've seen increases in price, but one of the things that we've also seen is our wind and hail deductible jumped to 4%. Some people have gone 5 and 6%. And a minimum water damage deductible of $100,000. So these are big things. And with the last harsh winters that we've had, you know, almost every winter in the last 4 years, we had an incident that required insurance involvement. So again, wind and hail on a $4 million building, 4% deductible, that's more than what it's going to cost to replace the roof.
Yeah.
So we're almost self-insured at this point.
Is there a play on that? Is there a play to get to actually truly self-insure and to make it worth it, make it make sense?
Yes and no. So it depends on the size of your portfolio. If you're large enough, there might be a play for self-insurance. The challenge is always going to be your lender. So if you own it outright, yeah, do self-insurance. You absorb the risk because you can afford it. But if you have a lender that owns 60, 70, 80% of the property, then they're not going to let you self-insure. They want an insurance policy. I have seen some people go the self-insurance route. There is a way where you can set up your own insurance company. There is obviously regulations that come around with it. And then you can turn around and do a reinsurance, which is cheaper. But again, it's a complicated legal structure, and you need to get your lenders buy-in on something like this.
Got it.
But absolutely, yeah, we've seen people do that because, as I mentioned earlier, we have our own commercial property management company, and we manage not just multifamily, we manage retail, industrial, and so on. And one of our retail owners that we manage for, they have a $250,000 deductible per building. So if they have a shopping center that has 3-4 buildings on it, every building has a $250,000 deductible, which is insane, right? Yeah. In order to generate enough damage that will make it worth invoking that policy, there's got to be over $1 million worth of damage. So that's really the challenges that a lot of the multifamily owners are facing, because it hit multifamily a little bit harder than everybody else. And then every $5,000 increase is $85,000 loss of value at a 6-cap environment. And that comes straight out of our pockets. So that's one of the challenges that we've seen going around the market. Shopping around is important. Shopping around every year is important. But it's not always helping I know personally we shopped around and you know, we still couldn't find a better policy than the 4% I just mentioned earlier.
But shopping around for sure. I mean, you're getting introductory rates, at least if you're shopping with a new broker versus the other brokers having to get you on the renewals, which we experienced that this year. We had to move on.
Yep. Yeah. It's, so, you know, it's part of what we do.
Yeah.
So yeah. Awesome. I just want to be conscious of your time. So we'll wrap up with the question we ask all of our guests at the end of our podcast. If you could go back in time and talk to young Josh, what kind of advice would you give? And let's assume you can't tell yourself that 2009 was the bottom. Put your hands on everything you can.
2009, yeah. I mean, I built up a really good company through the course of 10 years, and that was a great ride. It was fun. It was invigorating. I wouldn't take any of that away because I learned a ton of business principles and acumen through that experience for sure. And that's what's helped us propel as fast as we have in the past 2 years here. I would buy real estate while I was building up the other company. I would buy real estate because I was concentrating 100% on the business growth, not anything else. It was plowing everything back into the company, grow. I would have learned as I was growing. My son will do exactly what I would tell myself, which is him learning, but also becoming his own person. But learning real estate, I think everyone needs to know real estate. Everyone. I think that it almost should be a responsibility to know how to evaluate real estate and how to use it as a wealth building tool. If I could tell myself 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it would be to just learn real estate and then apply, learn, and at the same time building the company up.
Yeah, that's a good advice. Josh, if any of our listeners wants to reach out and brainstorm or maybe invest with you guys or do anything together, how can they find you?
Appelmancapital.com. It's APPELMAN capital.com. I'm on all of the social media channels, so you can look me up. We pump out some pretty good content before and after on a lot of our projects. So yeah, I'm out there. I'm active.
Awesome. We'll put it in the show notes as well. Josh, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Talk soon.
Awesome. And for you, the listeners, if you want to see more of the show, you can find us on YouTube, Apple, Stitcher, Android, and so on. We're everywhere. And if you can do us a favor and give us a review, 1 star, 5 star, we'll appreciate any review and any feedback. Thank you so much, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to our show. If you want to enjoy more episodes, please subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. For questions or feedback, please visit our site at www.aptopr.com.